At Journey Beyond Divorce, we understand that navigating through the emotional tsunami of separation and divorce is one of the hardest journeys you'll take. And we know that once the initial fear and pain begins to pass, a whole new storm of confusion, uncertainty, and self-doubt can surface. Journey Beyond Divorce can help you identify and clarify where you're feeling stuck and what steps you need to move forward, even if they're just baby steps. We guide you with practical, tangible support that you can start implementing right away. Our team of experienced divorce coaches is ready to help you. Listen through the show because we have a gift just for you. It'll help you navigate your divorce with more calm and confidence. You're listening to the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast with Karen McMahon. We invite you into a journey of healing and personal transformation that will radically change your divorce experience, heal your heart while refining your character, and enable you to be effective and feel empowered as you navigate the practical and emotional challenges of divorce.
They should look at divorce not as something horrendous, okay? Not as an end, but as a beginning for them. You know, we're talking about high net worth divorces, okay? That means that there's going to be enough money here to have your life, okay? And to live a very wonderful life. And this could be a great beginning for people.
Welcome to the High Net Worth Divorce Playbook, where we introduce you to the experts who can inform, guide, and support you through the unique complexities of your divorce. Throughout this series, you will hear from the best of the best on topics including the art of negotiating, how to divide and distribute complex assets, and what you need to know about splitting pensions. What your attorney doesn't know and how that can hurt you, how to find hidden assets, and the key to protecting you and your family's financial future. Today's episode of the High Net Worth Divorce Playbook is entitled, What Your Lawyer Doesn't Know and How It Can Hurt You. Our guest speaks to the importance of hiring a matrimonial attorney who is both financially savvy and has the wisdom and humility to acknowledge the limitations of their expertise and enlist the necessary financial experts. New York City matrimonial attorney Lisa Zeiderman walks us through how to choose the right attorneys to interview and how to use that initial consult to assess their qualifications for leading your support team. Once you've retained an attorney, Lisa walks us through how to create the rest of your team and highlights the level of collaboration you should expect to guarantee your best possible settlement. Lisa Zeiderman is managing partner at Miller Zeiderman LLP, a matrimonial attorney, CFL, and certified divorce financial analyst. Lisa regularly handles complex financial and custody divorce matters for high net worth individuals. Lisa was named one of the 10 best law attorneys for client satisfaction in 2019 by the American Institute of Family Law Attorneys. She's a founding member of the American Academy of Certified Financial Litigators and a member of the panel for Attorneys for Children. Lisa's also regularly published in various legal publications and quoted on issues ranging from financial empowerment to tax issues to child custody. I am so excited to have you with us today. Welcome, Lisa.
Thanks so much for having me, Karen. I'm so excited to be here.
You know, Lisa, as we spoke about before, this is such an important topic, and I'd love to start with just having you explain to our audience how hiring an attorney who is experienced in that high net worth space is different in some ways than just choosing a good attorney. And so can we just start with that?
Sure. You know, it's very important when you are hiring an attorney and you are in that high net worth space that you hire an attorney who is educated specifically in finances, that you have an interview or a consultation, and that you make sure that that person, that attorney, is asking questions related to your finances that are sophisticated and show a level of education that will help you get through your divorce in a positive manner.
Well, and that's a perfect lead into my first question, which is, how do you actually know what questions to ask? How can you talk to our listeners about how to pick the right attorney for their divorce, and maybe even give them a couple of tips on the right questions to ask and the right signs to look for so that they're hearing past the answer to know if it's truly, if that person is truly experienced in the way they need them to be?
Sure. So when I speak to a client, I ask them a variety of questions, and I'm not just listening to a story. I'm trying to spot issues. And that person who is across the table from me should also be listening to the questions that I'm asking. So are they questions related to your finances, such as, am I asking questions about your income and assets? Am I asking questions about executive compensation, if that applies? Are the questions probative of the issues that you think are in your case? If you're telling me about, for example, separate property issues, am I talking about tracing those separate property assets? Look, everyone has Google and internet, so everyone can get a bit familiar with the types of issues that you're looking at in your particular case. You know, even if you know very little about your own finances, you can do some research on Google and get prepared for a consultation. You should be prepared for the consultation, as should the attorney. So if the attorney is just sitting and listening and then at the end says, you know, well, here's my retainer, that's not probably a good fit for you. That attorney needs to be involved in asking the questions and listening to the answers.
You know, and I'm hearing you say, because even a really good attorney, right? So there are like rock star attorneys out there who deal in more of your standard income divorce, for lack of a better term. And so they could be asking good questions in general. They could be very inquisitive. What I hear you saying is different is the level of inquiry about the financial picture. So you may have custody concerns. You may have something you need to get off your chest about what's wrong with your spouse, which always probably comes up. But those questions about finances and I'm hearing you say that those would be sophisticated questions and maybe even multi-tiered questions.
That's correct. And while someone might come into the consultation and want to tell me their story about their spouse or deal with the custodial issues, I usually deal with the custodial issues because I think that's the most important thing to people. Okay. I just do. And then I move over to the financial questions that I have. And hopefully you may have brought some documents, and I start to go through the documents that you may have brought with you. And usually someone will ask me or my paralegal what documents to bring. And I'll say, bring the last 3 years of tax returns, bring whatever marital estate chart you might have, or spreadsheets, anything that you might have that might give us an inkling as to what the finances are. But the point is that that should be a conversation. And to the extent that you know the information, great, there should be a multi-tiered discussion. To the extent that you don't know the information, then you need to be asking the attorney, how will the attorney go about finding out the information?
Right. And I know we're going to dive into that in a few minutes, along with all of the various pieces of it. And so when we first had this conversation, I was very surprised to hear you say that. And often I've heard that that first consultation where the attorney is educating the person on what a preliminary conference is and how the process will go, and less about digging into the specifics of their situation. And so just if you could just speak to that for a minute. If somebody, you know, you're paying for the consultation, you're going there, and if the attorney that you're interviewing, and I want you to hear this as the listener, you are interviewing that attorney, if they're like, no, we would do that after you retain me, what would you say to that?
I would say that's not a good consultation, to be honest with you. I pride myself on the fact that I provide information and I also spot issues during a consultation. So by the time I'm done with the consultation, by the time I've completed the consultation with this person should have some idea of where to go next. In other words, they should have some idea of what the asset issues are. Okay. And it may be liability issues, but asset issues. Okay. And what the custodial issues are and what the plan is. And it's not going to be a plan necessarily that I'm going to describe in the consultation about the preliminary conference as you describe. Okay. Or to explain what a deposition is at length. It's going to be an overall picture of what that person is going to be, what that person should be looking at during their divorce, and a strategy for doing that. And then, frankly, to some extent, I wouldn't say a conclusion, but an idea of where we are going with this divorce. So that's very important. And what documentation I might want. I really do think that that's what a consultation should be. It's not that I'm going to solve your case at the consultation, because I'm not, okay? Right. But I should have some good ideas, and so should your attorney that you're choosing.
And the other thing I'm hearing between the lines, Lisa, which is really interesting, because I always speak to my clients about this, is if I were in that situation and meeting with you, my sense is when I left that consultation, I would have a sense of confidence and ease that the person I'm about to hire knows enough to truly have my back and negotiate in my best interest, and not give me a fantasy idea of what's not realistic, but negotiate within what's realistic. And so if someone leaves your consultation, or if you're listening, you leave a consultation and you just feel like, wow, this person is a rock solid partner on my team. That's what I'm hearing you say.
That's exactly correct. We are very honest in the consult, and we are very clear about what the outcome could be. Okay. So we give, you know, a range of what we think the outcome would be based upon obviously the information that we have at the time. And we also try to be very realistic in that first consultation about what the goals are, what's important, what's not going to play a part. Because if we don't do that in the consultation, then we don't have a partnership, right? You want to have a partnership with somebody that you can trust. Yeah. And you want to have somebody that you can rely upon, and that their word is really good. And so I'm not there to sell myself. I'm there to help you during your consultation. And I am there to make sure that you can trust me, essentially, to give you the straight story, because I will give the straight story.
Beautiful. And then there's a few other nuances that you had shared with me when we spoke. And so even if you have someone who has all of that, there are other flags, red flags, that could be problematic. You had mentioned listening for whether or not the person is collaborative, right? Rather than like, you know, a pit bull and wanting to litigate or fight for every last penny. Can you speak to that a little bit?
I can. So first of all, I want to make the distinction between collaborative law and collaborative.
Thank you.
Because there is collaborative law, and I'm not a collaborative law attorney, but I am collaborative. And there is a difference. So I'm collaborative in the sense that I often work with a forensic accountant, a vocational analyst, a divorce coach, a career counselor, a tax attorney, an estates and a trusts attorney. These are people that I have at my fingertips, frankly, in terms of being able to work as a team. Okay. They are trusted people. And I have a variety of those resources in my capacity, right? So I can call up someone and say, we are going to need a business evaluation. And this is, and can you take this on? Or I can call up a vocational analyst and say, I'm representing someone and the other spouse isn't working and we need to have a vocational analysis done to see what the earning capacity of that person is, because it would be unfair to just assume that that person can earn nothing as opposed to something. Because even in a high net worth case, there's going to be issues about paying maintenance and child support and all of those things. And you need to know what the Correct. Abilities are.
So I'm hearing, which is not where I thought you were going with this. So this is interesting. So on the one hand, I hear you say that the other thing to be looking for is the resources relationship team that your attorney has. And throughout the rest of our conversation, we're going to dig into the details of that. What I hear you saying is you want someone who has that team either on their staff or in relationship with, so that given the complexity and sophistication of this type of a divorce, that your attorney isn't presenting themselves as being a jack of all trades, so to speak.
That's correct, because there are going to be tax issues, for example. And while your attorney should be able to spot the tax issues, they're not tax attorneys necessarily. So you're going to want to have a tax attorney. While the attorney may be able to spot estates and trusts issues that could come up, again, you want someone who focuses their practice on that. So we do not profess to be a jack of all trades, to say the least. I think what I'm good at is spotting issues. I also, to your point, and this was the other piece of your question, was that you need to have an attorney who can actually pivot. I think that's very important. So you need to have an attorney who can be aggressive, but also can pull back, who can resolve your case. Okay, so they need to be strategic, and I always say this to clients, I'm not a bull in a china shop. I don't run at one speed, okay? Mm-hmm. Sometimes people think I'm very aggressive, and I do run at one speed. I don't, actually. I think out what I am doing, because it is not one size fits all, particularly for a high net worth case, okay? You have to really massage the different areas, and that means negotiation and collaboration with the other, with opposing counsel, so that you can get to places where discovery is turned over, where you can have depositions, where you can learn about the finances, because that is your goal. And sometimes it's not just about litigating, it's about working together with the other, with opposing counsel.
And you know, it's interesting. I was recently working with an executive, and one of the things we ended up talking about was that his attorney had been scorned in his marriage, and that there was actually baggage. And so the attorney was fighting or reactive in a way that wasn't serving our mutual client. And so that what I'm hearing you say is it's not just a pivot. It's like there could be difficult parties on the other side, and that you're not taking it personally, and that you're not reactive, but that you're always strategic, because the client's going to be reactive. They don't need to be hiring an attorney who's reactive.
That is absolutely true. You need an attorney who can manage your case. You're paying this person to manage your case. This is not their fight, essentially. You need a good advocate for your fight, right? You need a good advocate for your case. You need a good advocate who's going to think about whether there should be a fight at all, because many times it's not about a battle. It's just about making sure that you have found and identified all the assets and all of the income, and that you can now negotiate a conclusion and a resolution that is favorable to your client.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So is there anything else on this initial interview before we start diving into the granular details?
No, I think that really is the initial interview. And then there should be, at the conclusion of your interview, there should be some strategy that your attorney talks about as to how to get to the issues that attorney has spoken about. So a procedure for doing that, but not the nitty gritty necessarily, because remember, a consult is usually approximately an hour. Maybe it's a little bit more, maybe it's a little bit less, but it's approximately an hour. So you're not going to learn everything. It's also not a bad idea, frankly, to have a second consult before you hire your attorney. Very often people come to me at a second time. Sometimes they come months later, because they've thought about all of this information that we've discussed during their consultation and absorbed it, and then come back to me and have their second consult, and that's when they retain me.
And on that point, I always, when I talk to my clients, I tell them hiring an attorney is often the very first new relationship you have as you're entering divorce. And so you want to pay close attention to how you choose. So you don't choose your sister's attorney or your neighbor's attorney. And there's something called holographic thinking, which is you use your logic, you use your heart, and you use your intuition. And when you take the time, and sometimes you just, you're in the meeting and they've nailed it. And it's like, Lisa's my girl, I'm going with her, I know it. But so if you're listening, it's like, you walk away from that consult and you need to do a scan. Like how was that in terms of information? Did I feel listened to? Did I feel like the person talked fast, made me feel silly when I was asking questions? Did I have an intuitive hit that something's off or something's perfect? And so I would say that absolutely more than one consult is really wise. It's like if you go to a doctor and you find out like there's a really big issue, you want to visit more than one doctor. You want to talk to a couple of people, because what's going to happen then is if you interview two or three attorneys, then you've got some kind of a comparison. If you've never done this before, how do you know? You might think the first person is great until you sit down with the second person and think, wow, like I was really off the mark with the first.
That's 100% true. And it also is about personality. This is, as you said, this is going to be your first relationship, right? As you're going through your divorce. And it is a relationship, because this person is going to be learning everything about you and your marriage, probably, and your finances and your kids. My husband always jokes that I know every single person's kid's name. Okay. I can't remember the neighbor down the street, but I remember everybody's kid's names. But in all seriousness, this is a team. You need to feel that you're part of a team, because this is your divorce. And this may be, by the way, a learning experience in some ways. You may be learning about your finances as you're going through this too.
Right.
And so you don't want to feel intimidated by that person. Right. You want to feel that that person is going to take you through it so that you have a clear understanding, because at the end, you're going to have to make decisions about resolving this matter. And you're going to have to be part of the negotiations and the settlement discussions. And so you want to have the information. You don't want to just hand it all over and not understand any of it. So you need to have somebody who's going to help you through that too.
Beautiful. So I know that you talked about the importance of the custodial issues, but for our conversation today, and I just want to say to the listeners, your kids are the most important. Today's episode is about your finances. And so so the custodial issues aside, let's dive into where you go as an attorney from there. And let's just start with finding assets, because that's such a big one. And of course, if you're listening in and this is the first episode you're listening to, we've spoken to someone on the art of negotiation, on finances, complex finances, and distributing them. And actually, our last episode was on avoiding retirement nightmares. So we go much more into detail with those experts. Lisa's really going to give us a bit of a broad stroke, but with enough detail so that you understand each step of the way, what you want to listen for in those other shows too. So can we start with finding assets?
Absolutely. So start with your own separate property. Okay. That is a place to find assets because those assets are taken off the top, right? So I always ask people at the beginning of the consult, what separate property do they have? What premarital assets did they have when they came into the marriage? And what, if any, inheritances did they or their spouse receive? Okay, that is one of my first questions because I want to understand what the marital estate really is and what it is not. And then, because somebody could be looking at a $20 or $30 million package, but what if $15 million of it is someone's inheritance?
Now, I want to just for the purpose of because we're speaking to people literally across the world. I do know that there are states within our country where that varies. So can you just, I want you to continue, but just speak to, if you could just make a disclaimer here. Okay.
Absolutely. So this is New York law that I'm talking about when it comes to separate property. Every state has its own view of separate property. And of course, California is community property, although I've heard that there are separate property, components to that community property as well. However, that being said, in New York, we have separate property. And if you have premarital property that you have kept separate and apart from marital property, meaning income earned during the marriage, assets accrued during the marriage, if you kept it separate apart and not commingled it with anything, I'll explain that in a second, not commingled it, and you can trace it, you can show it, you can show where it came from, you can show where it is right now, you can show that you kept it separate and apart, it is yours. Okay, so that is one of the very first things that we look at, because if you've done that, that's money in your pocket that you can walk out with at the end of the divorce, and it comes off the top, as I said. So that means, and I talked about tracing it, okay, and I talked about commingling. So sometimes people, because they're not educated in divorce law, no big surprise, there's not a lot of courses out there, right? Many people come to me and they've come into the marriage with millions of dollars and they have then put them into joint accounts and have put their income in during the marriage and have paid bills out of it during the marriage and have put their bonuses. And by the time they come to me, they can no longer basically trace and delineate where that separate property is. I always account it to, if you walk into a room with dollar bills, which dollar bill is your separate property and which is not, they all look alike. So if you haven't kept it in separate and apart, no good. But if you have, that's the very first place that I look for assets, because it also is something that you have to trace. And usually people have to get documents to do that. And so, and I'm going to say that it's so important to make sure that you get hold of those documents as early in the process as possible, because documents have a way of disappearing during divorces. Yes. I literally have had people go to find their prenuptial agreements and they've been disappeared, thrown out, whatever. So you need to make sure that you get those documents, and bank records sometimes only go back 7 years. So again, the sooner that you start collecting those documents, the better, and get them into a safe place. Okay, so that's first and foremost. Then I usually talk about income, and income also includes executive compensation. It may include items such as restricted stock units, which are compensation that is given sometimes for future performance. And that means that there will be grant documents, award agreements. And so we start to talk about that, because that is part of compensation. And that also, and that this actually goes across the country in many states, because it is something that actually originated from Colorado and California. This idea of future where you're being given an equity bonus in units of stock, essentially, and you need to continue to perform in order to vest into that stock. Mm-hmm. And so the question becomes how to value all of that and what part of that is marital and what is not. That is a place that is also important for people to gather documents and to understand the law. And as I said, I've done lectures on this, and it absolutely applies to other parts of the country. So important to note. And then, of course, tax issues. You know, one of the places that people often, I would say, hide assets is the most obvious place. It's on the tax return. They will, a spouse may hide assets by not, by having their, by overpaying taxes and then having taxes roll into the following year or year after, and then collecting those taxes for themselves at some point, right? So instead of having the check sent back to, you know, the marital residence, it stays in the tax return and rolls into the next year. All you have to do is open the tax return and you can see if there was an overpayment and where that overpayment is supposed to go. So these are different types of issues that I discuss, not all of them necessarily, but some of them. And then we talk about what the marital estate chart looks like and where assets might be that you might not know about. We also talk about, in terms of finding assets, whether there is any marital waste, gambling, any drug abuse, extramarital affairs. You know, sometimes we find millions of dollars spent on such extramarital affairs or gambling issues, and those go into back into the marital pot if we can actually distinguish what they are. And so that might be another place to find assets. And of course, there's the business, right? Business valuations are very important because people often have, that may be their biggest asset, might be their business, number one. And it also might be a good place to hide assets.
Calming the chaos of divorce begins with quieting your mind and getting clear on what you want and how to get it. That's why we created the Divorce Survival Kit. It's an easy-to-digest guide with five essential tips that help transform your suffering into valuable insights and your confusion into effective action. So go to DivorceRecoveryLifeline.com and grab your Divorce Survival Kit today.
So hidden assets comes up in a number of different areas, and you know, you're covering, again, with the broad stroke, so many details of the asset picture, right? And I just want to say to the audience, again, we do have in this series the experts that Lisa just referred to that are on her team. We've got one of each expert that really drill down in that detail. So if you're yearning for more detail, as Lisa's speaking, you're going to find it in some of the other episodes in this series. Can we talk about the other part of the finances, which is maintenance?
Sure, meaning spousal support.
Spousal support.
So, and it used to be called alimony, and some people call it maintenance, and some people call it spousal support.
Right.
But
Thank you. We
can. So, in terms of spousal support, depending upon the jurisdiction, depending upon the state, there are different rules, right, as to spousal support. Some states are more generous than other states. I would say that New York is probably not the most generous state in terms of spousal support. But one area that you need to look at is that vocational analysis, because either way, okay, whether you are the spouse with the earning power or the spouse who doesn't have the earning power right now, you will probably need a vocational analysis so that income can be determined as to what you could or should earn, okay? And there's that should, because it's based upon earning capacity, not necessarily what your earnings are right at the moment. And then there is a calculation performed based upon lifestyle in New York, okay, where we look at what all of the lifestyle has been, and then we try to negotiate a package of maintenance that will hopefully meet expectations as to most of the lifestyle. It probably will not meet expectations as to all of the lifestyle, because it's just not realistic, particularly in New York. The other piece is, however, before you get to maintenance, you need to figure out what the marital estate chart is, because that marital estate will also be throwing off income and distributions, perhaps. And so, you know, for example, if we're dealing with a major real estate case, what are the distributions? What are, you know, what's being paid out? What interest level can be earned for assets that are actually accrued? So all of that will play into maintenance because it's part of income.
So if I could just summarize that last piece that you said, in the equitable distribution part, if part of what you're receiving is an ongoing generating of income, that's part of the calculation when you get to the maintenance. It's you don't get to bite from the same apple twice, so to speak.
That, yes, to some degree. I mean, sometimes you do bite from the same apple. However, it is a consideration. And I'm going to say that in high net worth cases, there are times when maintenance is not paid because the assets are sufficient, more than sufficient in terms of what they're going to be generating in terms of income, that maintenance is really not a consideration for the court at that point.
And then I know that this is different from state to state, but can you at least kind of speak to it in a blanket way in terms of the role that the years that you've been married plays into maintenance or spousal support?
Sure. I think generally the longer the marriage, the longer the amount of the duration of spousal support that there will be. There are exceptions. But that would be, I think, is a pretty good rule of thumb. Those who are married longer are probably going to have a longer time to pay or get pay, or be paid maintenance.
And then the other question I have is about child support, because I know that there's a calculation in New York State. I'm sure there's a calculation in most states. But when you're dealing with this level of income, does that cap apply, or is there another way that the courts or the attorneys negotiate child support when you're dealing in this area?
So in New York, there's a statutory cap, which is actually very low, generally speaking, right? In a high net worth case, it certainly would be low. It's $154,000 of combined income that child support would be based on. However, there's a second part of this, which is that we look to the case law. So we don't just look to the statute, but we also look to the case law. And the case law actually can go, the cap can be much, much higher. Sometimes $300,000 of combined income, $400,000, $500,000. And then, of course, there are all the add-ons. So add-ons can be a place actually that you really need to look. Summer camp, sleepaway camp, college tuition, extracurricular activities, horseback riding, gymnastics, all of those are places that you can have paid in addition to what we call basic child support. So again, it goes to the lifestyle of the children in that particular case. You're going to be arguing. I mean, children who are used to horseback riding and gymnastics and sleepaway camp and summer programs and have a lifestyle, just because their parents are getting divorced does not mean that that lifestyle for the children should be diminished. And that is what you are arguing. And keeping in mind that the judges want the best interests for the children. That does not mean, by the way, and there's a case actually that always states this, and I always remember this case, that child support should be disguised maintenance. And I think actually that's what the case law actually said. You really are talking about what are the needs of the children.
Beautiful. So you mentioned you mentioned experts before, and you mentioned a vocational analyst. I'm going to just invite you to take us to the next topic here. What would make the most sense now to share with our listeners?
So I think that we can talk about why these experts are important. First of all, I think that there are various experts in a case that are important. There is the divorce coach, which is an important expert because, frankly, your divorce is about stamina to some degree. Okay. This is absolutely not a sprint. It's a marathon. Okay. People sometimes want to rush it and get out. They often tell me they want out. And the key to this is to understand that this is a one-time event for the most part, and that you want to make sure that you do get what you are supposed to receive in this divorce. And rushing it will probably not be helpful to you. You know, you need to make sure that you've identified all the assets, that you have identified and that you've negotiated those assets, and that you have made sure that you have accounted for all of the monies. Look, if you're the person who has earned the money and who has also maintained the financials in the household and can come in and give me a spreadsheet, and you know for sure this is what the marital estate looks like and here's my separate property, then yes, you can do that quickly. Okay. And that's great. But those people are the rare clients, frankly. There are much more of a, there's much more of a chance of having a client that doesn't have all of that knowledge or is missing pieces of that marital estate chart. And so you want to make sure that you've accounted for it. Therefore, you need a forensic accountant sometimes. You need a coach, a divorce coach. You may need a vocational analyst, as we spoke about before, a tax attorney, to make sure that, for example, when you divide up the assets, that you're not actually causing tax issues. Yes, equitable distribution is usually tax-free transfers, but people forget, and attorneys sometimes forget, okay, to their detriment, that still there are tax issues. You know, we mentioned restricted stock units before. Well, usually when they vest, you have to pay taxes on them. Mm-hmm. And usually the person who holds the restricted stock units has to pay the taxes. And if you're representing that person who is holding them and then giving income based upon those to the other spouse, you better make sure that you've accounted for those tax issues. Yes. So you need a tax attorney to make sure and overlook that language. Also, quadros, qualified domestic relations orders, how to divide retirement accounts. Not all retirement accounts require quadros, but some do. You may need a someone to value pensions, to value retirement assets. Some of them are very straightforward. I can look at a 401k and see what there is in a 401k, but a pension, you might want to put a value on a pension and value it with a present day value so that there can be a buyout for it.
And I was interviewing a quadro expert, and that's the Avoid Retirement Nightmares episode, and she was describing how there's state law, there's federal law, and then there's the corporate plan administration and their rules. And so when she was saying, she said, I would never practice matrimonial law because that's outside of my wheelhouse, and a matrimonial attorney can't possibly have the detail and sophistication and understanding. And when they think they do, and her nightmare stories were nightmare stories of people losing tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars because of mistakes, which is why back to hiring the right attorney who understands that is so absolutely vital.
100%. I mean, we just hired a quadro expert to look over the language in our agreement before our clients sign the agreement. Because if you get that language wrong in the agreement, they can't fix it in the quadro. Your agreement is your contract. And sometimes people have unknowingly given up millions of dollars because they have allowed the language in the agreement to eliminate their right to survivorship.
That's one of the things she talked about, which was crazy. And literally just a couple of words or checking the wrong box, or like when she was telling her stories, I kept picking my jaw up off the ground. I was like, wow, this is really complicated and really, really important. Absolutely. And yes. I just want to, go ahead.
No. So that is an example. Quadros are a perfect example of making sure that you have an attorney who is smart enough to know that they need an expert, because that is an area, for example, that you do not want somebody drafting language who does not have a quadro expert looking at it. And if they are doing it, then you have to say, well, you know, Are you sure, right? Are you absolutely sure? Shouldn't I have someone else look at it? And sometimes I have clients who say to me, but I hired you to do this, and I know you know how to do it. And I say, yes, and I'm going to have the Quadro expert look at it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned earlier the divorce coach, and I want to take a moment here because one of the things people so often they want to expedite it. And I've told my clients, like, if I could hand you a fast forward button, I would be doing you such a disservice. You just described the legal and financial reasons for the disservice. I'm going to say that in the pain and the struggle of going through this, there is so much personal growth that happens. You learn patience and grace. You get a better understanding of your part in the dissolution of the marriage. You get to learn how strong you really are, how capable you can be. And if you've been that non-moneyed spouse, you step into this and you start really seeing your strengths and your abilities, and you emerge such a refined and better version of yourself. And so through it, you know, and I'm not taking away from how painful it is. Mine was 3.5 years. It was truly a walking hell at times. But I've been doing this for over a decade, and the healing and refinement that comes is incredible. And there are certain states where you can be divorced in 60 days. And when I've worked with clients there, it's like they've barely just begun getting their feet on the ground or grieving. And it's like done. And it has a different kind of devastation and shockingness to it. And so while in many states it's slow and it takes a while, and especially if it's complicated, I just want to say to the listeners, you may not want to hear this, but trust that in this unfolding are gems along the way that are going to serve you so much better on the other side.
So I'm going to add to that, because my personal story is that I went through my divorce for, I guess, about 2.5 years also, and then decided actually to become a matrimonial attorney. And, you know, it wasn't that I was angry at the process. I had become actually engaged and interested in it. And I felt like I could really help people, because I think that more than anything, people need someone who can respond to them and respond to their issues quickly. And I think that sometimes matrimonial attorneys just don't understand that. But that's a very big piece of it. But more importantly, this became a second career for me. And had the process been faster, sooner, easier, maybe it wouldn't have happened. But I did actually end up going and getting my bachelor's degree at Fordham, and then went on to Fordham Law with the sole idea that I was going to be a matrimonial attorney. And 8 years later or 7 years later, that's what I did. So yeah, it really is it's a life-changing experience.
Yeah. And so much. And my story is very similar in how I ended up where I am. And so many of the people that I work with, it's the brilliance of their new life chapter just informs how valuable it was to not have the fast forward, but not sprint through something and do it poorly or sloppily or too quickly, and to really honor the unfolding. And this is so hard to hear, but we're always exactly where we're supposed to be. And there's something in the struggle for us if we're willing to look at it.
Agreed.
Yeah. So we have a vocational analyst who we're going to be speaking to. You mentioned tax attorney. Can we just talk a little bit about the trust and estate attorney? Like you barely touched on that, and I think that's an important thing to mention.
Sure. So a trust and estates attorney is really important, because how you're going to deal with your future assets and also protecting your child support, your spousal support, you know, if your spouse should, your spouse and your former spouse-to-be, right, should be deceased. That is important. And in some cases, in high net worth cases, there is a desire to preserve assets for the next, you know, for the future generation, for your children and for, you know, the next generation. And so these are areas that you may want to consult with a tax and estates person, a trust and estates person, so that you can provide for children in your contract, in your settlement agreement, as part of your settlement negotiations, so that perhaps it doesn't go to a different family, essentially, right? Because that is sometimes the concern, is that, you know, it's going to go to a different family, to other children other than the children of the marriage, et cetera. And so that is a place that sometimes people do want to have a consultation with a trust and estates attorney and ensure that they've covered that particular area.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, as I'm listening to you speak, Lisa, I could imagine jumping on this call overwhelmed and then just feeling like, oh my goodness. And there's so much. And as much as there is, they're all such important decisions, and you never have to make them all at once. And so with the right attorney and the right guidance, it's great to have the broad view, the landscape view of what's coming. And then it's really important to do first things first and to know that, well, you may need to research A right now and make a decision about it next week, B, C, D, E, all of that is to come. And so if you're feeling overwhelmed, I would strongly encourage you to listen again, pen and paper in hand, and know that you never have to address all of this at once. And it's so important to know what the all of this is, so that, as Lisa said, it's your divorce, it's your life. And even though you're hiring experts, you want to know what all of those details are so that you make sure that they're all being attended to.
That's 100% correct. And I think that people have to understand that we just covered almost an entire year and a half worth of information, you know, that they, as they progress through the divorce, these issues will come up. But this is very much like my consultation, frankly, for people. And it is a lot of information, but it's a lot of information so that you can start to think about the pieces.
Yep. And I think you and I both talked about it being a marathon and not a sprint. And you had also said something to me when we first spoke that I want you to share with our listeners before we get off the phone negotiations. And you said something, yeah, you remember. So just speak to negotiations for a minute. And I think that's actually a good point to end on.
So I think, so my strategy in negotiations is that you take every step of negotiations seriously, because there is always a, there could be a point when you want to get off the train, essentially. And there may be a point when there's enough that is being offered to you that you don't want to take the risk. It's about risk reward always. And so I always take every single settlement proposal very seriously and discuss it with the client fully, because they may decide that they don't need every bit of information, that they have enough, and that the offer is good enough. And that means that they can really plan out their life. And this is a good place to maybe meet with a financial planner at that point, right? And to make sure of what they believe that they will need to support themselves and to have their life and their lifestyle. And so it's important to keep this in mind, because you don't have to get every single penny, okay? Sometimes you can leave a little bit on the table, okay? A little bit on the table if you feel like your deal is good enough and maybe better than if you went into a courtroom and had a judge make a decision.
Beautiful. Yeah, so that's great. And you said something about not assuming that the first offer was not worthy, right?
Like
you said something so eloquently on that, and I kind of want you to restate it.
Sure. So sometimes I, you know, when I represent the moneyed spouse, many times that moneyed spouse will make the very best offer the first time, because they actually do want to be done. They know what the marital estate chart is. They know what the right numbers are. They are going to be much more generous at the beginning than they will be at the end. And very often I represent people who, when we get to the end, they say to me, that my spouse could have received so much more had she or he taken that particular offer that I offered in the first place. And instead, now there are millions of dollars down because they didn't take that first offer that I said was my drop dead offer. Okay. And that's the words I would say, because those are my keywords, that drop dead offer. Here it is. This is your go away offer so that we are done. You have to take that offer seriously. You know, even if it means getting back to the person and saying, I need a few weeks to kind of sort it out and make sure, work with my financial planner, make sure I'm not saying no, I just want to take a look at it seriously. Because that really may be the best offer.
Yeah,
so because that's a buyout to be done.
Yeah, don't assume that first offer is just the beginning of a game, a negotiation game. And it may be, but it very well may not be. And so I love that piece of advice. I think that's so valuable and so brilliant. Lisa, as we wrap up, any last words of advice for our listeners?
I think that for your listeners, that they should look at divorce not as something horrendous, okay, not as an end, but as a beginning for them. We're talking about high net worth divorces, okay? That means that there's going to be enough money here to have your life, okay? And to live a very wonderful life. And this could be a great beginning for people. And this could be really hopeful. So there's a whole world out there for you. And so use this to put together your new life. Use this opportunity.
Beautiful. How can they find you?
So they can find me by writing to me by email, which is lz@mzw-law.com, or by going to my website, lisazeiderman@info.com.
And that will be in the show notes. So if you don't know how to spell that, just look in the show notes for that.
And then also mzwnylaw.com. So and I'm on LinkedIn as well and Facebook, and I often write articles. I have a Psychology Today blog. So there's lots of ways to find me.
Yeah, so if you've really just felt so informed through this conversation, you know, Lisa's a rock star at what she does. And I really encourage you to reach out if you're in the New York area, by all means, schedule a consultation, re-listen to this conversation. There's a lot in here and it's really going to guide you wherever you are in moving forward. And Lisa, I can't thank you enough for the time that you've shared and the wisdom and advice that you shared with our listeners. So it's been so nice to spend this time with you.
Thanks so much. It's been great to spend time with you too. And it's been fabulous. So thank you.
And stay tuned. We will have another episode of the High Net Worth Divorce Playbook in 2 weeks. And there'll be another episode of the JBD podcast next week. So stay tuned and we'll talk to you then.
Thanks for joining us on the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast. I hope you found guidance and encouragement to help you along your journey. If you like my podcast, please take a minute to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. You can also visit us at jbddivorcesupport.com, where our team of coaches support both men and women through our one-on-one coaching, group programs, online courses, and free resources. Stay tuned for our next episode, and I'll talk to you soon. At Journey Beyond Divorce, we know that sometimes the most powerful support we can offer is to help you process the storm of emotions you're experiencing and gently challenge the beliefs that are keeping you stuck.
The way Karen delivers her program is that she validates the feelings, the emotions, the ups, the downs. She hones in on the specifics that really talk to that particular person when they're going through this crazy emotional time.
Let us be a beacon in the midst of this crazy emotional time. Book a free lifeline call with us to help lift the fog and begin practicing new ways of thinking, being, and doing that better support you as you journey through and beyond divorce. Our gift to you is taking that first step with you on your free Rapid Relief Lifeline call, where we help you navigate the emotional and logistical turbulence of separation and divorce. Visit rapidreliefcall.com to book your call.